And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week where the global carbon dioxide level was 417.81 parts per million. That's up 2.8 parts per million from this time last year. So there is a move afoot in the state of Massachusetts by your favorite utility that provides gas, natural gas, methane to your house to cook your food and whatnot. The incentive of these big utilities is to stay alive and keep making money. And one way they think they can do that is by adding hydrogen to your natural gas and then claim virtue for it. This is an ongoing issue. It's happening quickly. Utilities are trying to essentially pull a fast one, and we wanted to try and get to the bottom of that, understand what the issues were. And to that end, we have two experts from the Gas Leaks Allies Hydrogen Working Group. We have Sarah Griffith. How are you doing, Sarah?
Great. How are you?
Good. And we have Kathy Christopherson. How are you doing, Kathy?
I'm doing fine. Hope you are too.
Oh, we are. Thank you guys both for coming on. So I just painted a picture of a sort of snidely whiplash utility planning to add hydrogen to your natural gas supply. Did I get that right? Tell me, what's the story? What should people know about what's happening at the utility policy level in the state of Massachusetts?
Right. So in the last episode, we talked a little bit about the physical properties of hydrogen and how it's really not a good solution for heating our homes and businesses. What it's a solution for is keeping the gas utilities in business. But there's a lot of policy issues that are arising, and Kathy knows a lot about those. So do you want to start by telling us what's going on at the federal level, Kathy?
Sure. I think anyone that listens to the radio, which I do, but maybe it's on the television as well, has heard about Senator Manchin. I think he's been called Prime Minister Manchin now. His obstruction of the infrastructure bills, the two. The bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed is a giant gift to the fossil fuel industry in the world of hydrogen. To the tune of $9.5 billion, $1.5 billion for electrolyzers and $8 billion to create four regional hubs, to try to bring, I think we've heard the Department of Energy DOE's hydrogen shot, like Mr. Kennedy's moon shot. So their shot is to try to get hydrogen down to a dollar. And because at the moment, green hydrogen is expensive. The other thing we have to watch out for is now they call it clean hydrogen, not green hydrogen, because those colors are pesky and confusing and made people realize that some of the hydrogen is not actually very clean. In that infrastructure bill, there were requirements of those four regional hubs, where they were located, what the feedstocks had to be. Two of them had to be located in fracked gas strongholds. That should give you a clue. One needed to be a hub for hydrogen from the nuclear, and one could be, quote, renewable. So already you can see the setup isn't coming for good. The end uses were for power generation, transportation, heating, and industrial uses.
Kathy, if I could just, putting two sort of research hubs of hydrogen into fracked gas areas speaks to the idea that the method of manufacturing hydrogen from methane is pretty well known, right? That's kind of a standard industrial process and how we do it now, mostly, correct?
Right. But I think what they would be looking at is how you can make it, quote, clean, cleanly, or cleaner, which, whichever you you want to put on the end of the word clean. But also, I would just point out that in that bill, there is defined an Appalachian Regional Energy Hub Initiative. So I'm pretty sure we can see Mr. Manchin's fingerprints all over that one, right? So, you know, how will they take fossil gas and make clean hydrogen? First, they have to define clean hydrogen, but find a way to capture and store, right? Sequester the carbon. And I guess, you know, some of the maps that you can see of pipelines is that you sort of frack the gas, send it somewhere to make hydrogen, and then send the carbon back to be pushed back down where they got the fracked gas out of. It creates a giant network of pipelines for those of us in the pipeline fighting world. But it also, I think in the last episode, we were talking about the end uses of hydrogen should be the hard to electrify areas. And right away, this bill is, you know, defines power generation, transportation, heating, and industrial. So right away, they're just trying to get it to be used for everything. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not too sure what energy use is missing from that. Go ahead.
I just want to jump in with a little more detail about clean hydrogen and what that means. So every refinery in the United States makes hydrogen because they use it to take the sulfur out of the petroleum. So when they do that, that's mainly steam methane reforming, and that produces 9 to 11 times the volume of carbon pollution that it does hydrogen. So what this federal bill does is it says you have to get it down to 2 times the amount of carbon pollution. But the way they do that is probably not going to happen in real reality. They're talking about things like carbon capture and sequestration, which has been around for 50 years, and it's mainly an adjunct to enhanced oil recovery. So you inject carbon dioxide down into the shale to force the petroleum up. Those are the successful ones. There's only one carbon capture effort that has any metrics that make it look successful, and that's the Sleipner plant in Norway, which the Norway government completely pays for. It's a hugely expensive project. And that's been around for long enough that it seems like the carbon is staying underground. But here's the real hitch, is it takes energy to do these processes. So nobody's talking about capturing the methane used to run the carbon capture plant. So it's three card Monty. We're just moving the carbon around from place to place and still emitting it. It's not real.
And it seems like it's because the end result is hydrogen, which you can point to and say, oh, look how good and clean my hydrogen is. And you just ignore all of the emissions that were generated creating that hydrogen.
Right. It's where we are in Massachusetts right now, thinking that replacing oil heating with gas heating is a win, because nobody's looking at the fracking, the extraction of it, the transportation of the gas to Massachusetts, where it leaks all along the way. It is, by standard operating procedure, vented all along the way, right? The valve stations, the compressor stations, we know that they all vent as a means of keeping themselves from blowing up, which is okay. But it's that same sort of thing. I mean, I think hydrogen is great if you're a gas producer, because you produce gas as the feedstock. You use gas in the steam methane, you know, to heat up the water for the steam. And then you use more gas to try to capture and sequester it. And we know that the resulting hydrogen is only 30% efficient. So right there, you just let's just keep fracking more gas to create and store and sequester and make up for the lackings of hydrogen, it's a great thing if you are okay with continuing to frack gas.
So tell me, here in Massachusetts, what are the what's going on? What's the deal here?
So there are two pieces of legislation introduced this session. Mr. Golden has introduced H3887 for a study into renewable thermal, and then H4081, which produces some subsidies for renewable thermal.
Renewable thermal, define that for me. What do you mean?
So I think for me, we can let Sarah have a more technical. For me, it's sort of trees, trash, wastewater, anything they can gasify and send through the pipes and say that it will decarbonize the gas.
So this is conversion of stuff to some sort of carbon CH4 gas.
Yes.
Right, Sarah, is that the idea?
Yes, that's right. And then they would use some percentage of hydrogen as well in the pipes. So these bills set up funding mechanisms, one of which is asking electric customers to subsidize the gas distribution system. We want these two bills to die in committee, and they come out of committee on February 2nd. So if you can call your legislator, representative, or senator and say, don't pass these bills.
Sarah, Kathy, just so they catch them here.
3887 is the order for a study of hydrogen and natural gas or renewable natural gas. And then the second one is 4081, which changes what the gas companies can sell to be hydrogen and renewable natural gas, and sets up a bunch of funding mechanisms to subsidize that, since they are so much more expensive than what we're paying for methane now.
And this is where it gets nefarious, in that the state is actually now supporting this hydrogen mixing concept of putting, right? I mean,
the state has, so in the Clean Energy Climate Bill, they talk about looking into this, but we're not actively supporting these solutions right now. These bills are just in committee.
Okay.
That's a Clean Energy Climate Plan, not bill. That's all.
Right. Yeah. So we have, we do have a great solution that we would like people to support instead. There's the Future of Heat bill. Do you remember the number for that, Kathy?
No, I can quickly.
I can find it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an alternative to these other two.
Yes. So some of your listeners may be familiar with network geothermal, with using water to heat buildings and using the temperature difference between water in the ground and air temperature to heat and cool buildings. So this bill would allow gas companies to sell network geothermal, sell thermal heat. It sets up a specialized funding mechanism called securitization, which allows gas companies to borrow at a lower rate and then use that difference to also do things like help environmental justice communities convert first, or to train gas workers to become geothermal workers.
Sorry, and that bill number is 3298. Sorry to jump in.
3298. The phrase is so wonderful. A network geothermal. I would say, let me take a stab at it. You can correct me. That this is basically the concept that in sort of a city, instead of having natural gas pipelines under the street, there would be geothermal wells that go down and get basically 50 degree water all year long and pump that through the street in the network from sort of house to house. So that it's a geothermal mechanism. So the 50 degree water comes into your house, and then a heat pump uses that 50 degree water to make your house warm. But the idea of networking all that is a new thing in the world, right? There are geothermal systems, but they're all standalone standalone things for rich people's house, right? Out in their backyard, they got a geothermal well. But this is a network thing where the city is, it's all in collaboration, just like we have a network of gas pipes now, right? Is that fair?
Yes. So the genius of it is you can transfer thermal energy from building to building, and it's easier to keep the underground, the subsurface temperature modulated over the long term. So you still need electricity to run fans and pumps, but not as much as you would think.
Right. That's the whole, which is a, just to flag it, I mean, the whole idea of using a heat pump, which every time I say heat pump, I say you've got the refrigerator. Your refrigerator in your kitchen is a heat pump, right? So it's not exotic technology, right? Heat pumps will keep us all warm, and they can use this geothermal water to work even better. And so those are all good things. That's what the future of heat bill would facilitate or help us learn more and more about and begin to use, right?
Right.
But it's heat and cool.
Heat and cool. Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's almost too good to be true. Right. And from what I've heard, this networked geothermal is something that could be done at the scale of the problem, in the sense that you could imagine having all of Boston running on geothermally pumped, you know, water, just the way it runs on gas now, right? You can do it. It's a big deal, but it's possible.
Yes. So there are caveats with building density and so on, but they're going in and replacing the pipes through the gas safety enhancement program now to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. So why not just use that, you know, funding mechanism to put in geothermal? I don't know. Do you see a problem with that, Kathy?
No, I don't. And because I think one of the things that we were talking about in the previous is that they're only talking about blending 20%, right? In that 20% hydrogen is 80% fracked gas. And that's because after that, they would probably have to replace the whole distribution system and perhaps replace or maybe only retrofit all of your appliances, replace the people, the homeowner, landowner has to replace the gas system from the street into the house, because with the higher, I think Sarah mentioned that it's hydrogen embrittles the pipes. It's very corrosive. So if you have to replace the entire distribution system in all of your appliances, why not replace them with this and the electrification that's necessary to get us actually decarbonized, not 20% decarbonized or some other percentage that's even less?
I mean, the if I were to say it, the two alternatives, this is sort of like the Matrix with the red pill and the blue pill, right? There are two alternatives. One, we can put 20% of dirty hydrogen into our existing pipelines and get essentially no carbon reduction at an enormous cost, right? Or we can go this network geothermal path where we solve the problem and make the world a better place, right? For essentially the same kinds of money.
Yeah. Right, because 20% hydrogen blended is only a 7% emission reduction. Because it's a third.
Say that again, Kathy, because I think that's an important thing.
Yeah.
A shocking thing that people may not realize. They say, "Oh, I've got hydrogen in my natural gas, so I'm doing better." But you say it's only 7% less carbon dioxide than if you were running pure methane to heat your
home, right? Yeah, because 20%, it's a third. So third efficient. So you're only getting the heat or the energy power of a third of that. So you're only reducing 7, 21 divided by 3.
Interesting. Well, so tell me,
let me just
put up, go ahead.
Oh, just quickly about the safety issues. Right now, last summer in Massachusetts, we had gas explosions in three places. One, you know, burned a block of 12 houses, one exploded the front part of a house, and one exploded inside a house and killed a man inside the house. And we don't hear about these unless you read the little newspapers and track it. So we all know about the Black Swan event in Merrimack Valley. But there is constant ongoing danger from having this combustible fuel in our streets that the utilities aren't required to track or analyze the way surgeons and airline pilots do. So if we're just running water beneath our streets, we solve all kinds of problems. You know, we have thermal heat. We have a safe system that's not going to explode on us. We can tackle asthma, which is a huge problem. We're not going to be creating these noxious gases anymore. So there are a lot of good things to say about the network geothermal technology, and it is a real solution for both the gas utilities and for our ratepayers.
And it is, I'll say again, it is supported by something called the Future of Heat Bill, Bill 3298, which is in the legislature. So if you want to call up your representative, that would be a good thing to say in favor of the Future of Heat Bill, right?
Right.
Well, we will put up links to this information, dear listeners. So if you want to go track it down and take action, the links will be in the show blog at the website, the Mass Climate Action website, which is massclimateaction.org/blog. Go check all that stuff out. If you have questions about the show, have ideas of things we ought to be talking about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know the good, the bad, and the ugly. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using Stitcher or one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that safeguards environmental justice communities. So, Kathy, thank you so much for being here. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure.
Sarah, thank you for your insight. It's been wonderful to have you.
Well, thank you. This has been fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.